mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today with students in the Findlay City Schools heading back to class today. In case you missed it from earlier this week, some reminders about safety protocols for kids and parents, and the rest of us too. Also this morning in our Throwback Thursday, how to overcome bullies, trolls, and other challenges of childhood with the author of Bounce. Help your child build resilience and thrive in school, sports, and life. And it seems everyone has embraced the idea of tax-free tips. So will it help restaurant owners fill their open jobs for servers and other workers? We'll take a look at the results from Square's latest quarterly restaurant report. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, August 15th, 2024. Yeah, back to school today for Findlay City School students, county schools. They've got a little while yet. I think Liberty Benton starts next week, and then the rest of the county schools be after Labor Day, after the fair, will be back in class. But Findlay City Schools heading back to class as of today. Some of the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started here. It seems recreational marijuana sales are booming in the Buckeye State. It has been now about a week, little over a week, since recreational marijuana became legal in the state. Well, about a week since the first official licenses for dispensaries were issued. And so sales of recreational marijuana have only been going on for a week, and Ohio already rivaling some of the top markets in the country. State officials are reporting more than $11 million in sales during the first 4 days of cannabis sales. The Ohio Division of Cannabis Control says dispensaries sold nearly 1,300 pounds of the wacky weed. And not just that, but also over 170,000 units of other products like edibles and ointments from Tuesday through Friday of last week, just in the first 4 days. In addition to that, more than $8 million in medical marijuana sales were tallied last week as well. So that's a pretty impressive start there to recreational marijuana in the state of Ohio. Just an update for you in case you were curious. So you're getting up, and I know the kids, at least Findlay City Schools students, are getting ready to head back to class. For the rest of us, getting up, getting ready to head for work. And if you have a stressful job, maybe you might want to consider getting a new line of work. According to a new study published in the Journal of the American Heart Association, workplace stress can nearly double a person's risk of developing atrial fibrillation, or AFib as it's known. It is an irregular heartbeat that can lead to stroke or heart failure eventually. And workplace stress can nearly double your risk. And this can happen even with people who have not previously shown any signs of having this problem. According to the American Heart Association's 2024 heart disease and stroke statistics, more than 12 million people are projected to have AFib in the U.S. by the end of this decade. The research followed nearly 6,000 workers in Canada for an average of 18 years, polling them about their daily grind that featured high job strain, which is defined as high psychological demands coupled with low control over one's work and effort-reward imbalance. In other words, jobs that where you don't get paid all that well for all of your efforts. The researchers don't exactly know why job stress can trigger AFib, but because the link is so strong, they recommend prevention strategies targeting psychosocial stressors at work to reduce the public health and economic burden associated with AFib. Long and short of it is, if you have a stressful job, you might want to consider getting a new job where it's less stressful. But if you are able to find, especially in this day and age, if you are able to find a less stressful job, please let the rest of us know, because I don't know of any job that is not stressful. I mean, let's be honest here. But that's what they say. Double your risk of AFib. Wow. So if you have had a stressful week at work, this may be just what you need. It is happening this weekend in Dayton at the Dayair Ballpark, which is Dayton's minor league baseball park, home of the Dayton Dragons, which is, a double-A team for the Cincinnati Reds? Anyway, the ballpark is hosting the Great American Beer Tasting this weekend. It is Saturday between 2 and 6 p.m. Guests will get to try 20 samples out of over 100 different beers, ciders, and seltzers. Over 100 different beers, ciders, and seltzers will be available. I guess, at least according to the story, it sounds like they're going to limit you to 20 samples of your favorites between the hours of 2 and 6 p.m., and I'm guessing, do they have a game at the ballpark? Do they have a Dayton Dragons game? Is it like before the game? The Great American Beer Tasting? By the way, and if you're thinking, drive to Dayton, get hammered for the Great American Beer Tasting and then drive home. No, there is a special discount admission available for designated drivers. So if you want to bring somebody along who will be your DD, they can get in at a discounted rate. It doesn't say free, but a discounted rate. I don't have all of the information on admission and all of that. But if you're interested, you look up the Great American Beer Tasting in Dayton this weekend. So just want to let you know about these things. I'm here to inform. Make sure that you are aware of all of these important things. So Taylor Swift will resume her European concert tour with shows in London this weekend. What is it? Wembley Stadium, I believe. Taylor Swift is performing this week. And Taylor Swift has obviously been, dominating the world of entertainment for the past couple of years now. And I am convinced this story, if I wasn't convinced before, I am now by this story here, that her fans will buy up anything. Anything that is even remotely connected to Taylor Swift. I mean, these are diehard fans who just have to get their hands on anything associated with their favorite singer. You remember the stories, about a month ago in the news about, in entertainment news, about a run on typewriters in this country. Apparently, there's a song on her new album that references her ex-boyfriend's typewriter. That, I guess the song goes, he left his typewriter at her apartment, and so she starts typing on her design. I don't know. Anyway, there's a typewriter involved, and I think there's actually a photo of the typewriter on the cover art for it. Anyway, so all of a sudden, Taylor Swift fans had to go out and find these typewriters. There was a run on old school typewriters. Not to be outdone, Taylor Swift inspired street signs have sold out in New York City. Cornelia Street signs at the New York City store, the city's official gift shop, sold out like that. I mean, super fast. New York City Department of Transportation announced earlier this week that it was selling authentic Cornelia Street signs that they manufacture, just like you would see in New York City. Actual street signs said Cornelia Street. Now, here's the story and why this is significant. Apparently, Taylor Swift used to live on Cornelia Street. She had an apartment there or something. And the song Cornelia Street is featured on her new album. So it's a Taylor Swift song. It's where she used to live. So Taylor Swift fans have to have it. 200 of the signs selling at $75 each were reported to have sold out in just hours after the announcement by the city that they were selling those at the city's official gift shop. 200 of them in just a couple of hours. $75 a piece. Taylor Swift fans literally will buy anything if there's even the remotest connection to Taylor Swift. Wow. That is because she is a whole economic machine unto herself. I wonder what the Taylor Swift GDP is. The gross domestic product of Taylor Swift is these days. She's got to be like making more money than some countries in the world now at this point. You know, I mean, her albums, concerts, all of the merchandise. And how about this? You chew on this lastly this morning among the first things that you need to know to get your Thursday morning started. What countries are the happiest in the world? According to the annual Global Emotions Report from Gallup, Latin America dominates the list along with Southeast Asia. In the Americas, Mexico, Paraguay, Panama, Guatemala, and Costa Rica top the list of countries with the happiest emotions with scores in the mid-80s out of 100. Indonesia and the Philippines also experience higher than average levels of positive emotions, including feeling well-rested, being treated with respect, learning something interesting, and joy. Those are some of the metrics. Out of the 142 countries that were surveyed, the worldwide average score was 71 out of 100. Happiness score, 71 out of 100. And the United States, not even in the top 10, in case you're curious. I don't know where the U.S. lands specifically, because the entire list was actually behind a paywall. I tried to look it up, but frankly, I wasn't interested enough to pay for it. So all I have are like the top 10, but the U.S. is not on that top 10. And by the way, and this is kind of interesting, the countries at the top of the Global Emotions Report for positive emotions are different from the happiest countries according to the World Happiness Report. That is dominated by Nordic countries like Finland and Denmark. The differences come down to what is being measured. While the World Happiness Report measures people's overall life satisfaction, the Global Emotions Report measures whether people had specific positive experiences on a given day. And they say because Latin American and Southeast Asian countries highly value community, social connections could make it more likely for people to have positive experiences in the way the survey measures it. So, you know, things like feeling respected or smiling and laughing a lot and that kind of thing. So that's why for the differences between the Global Emotions Report and the World Happiness Report. And that is probably more than you ever wanted to know. But there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories. Bottom line is U.S. is not among the happiest countries on Earth. But parents are today because the kids are heading back to school. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Increasing clouds today, a high around 80. A chance of a shower or storm tonight, low in the upper 60s. The Ohio State Highway Patrol says two people from Seneca County were seriously injured in a motorcycle crash. The crash happened in Erie County at the intersection of Mason Road and State Route 269. The Highway Patrol said a 29-year-old man from Tiffin was operating a Harley-Davidson and a 30-year-old woman from Republic was a passenger. The Highway Patrol says the man failed to maintain control of the motorcycle while approaching the intersection. It overturned and traveled through the intersection and struck a barbed wire fence before coming to rest. Both the driver and passenger sustained serious injuries and were life-flighted to a Toledo hospital. Get more in the story on our website. There is conflict over the use of a wildlife area in eastern Ohio near the West Virginia border.
In Harrison County, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources announced that EOG Resources, a Texas-based oil and natural gas company, can frack in the Keene Wildlife Area. It's an 84-acre wooded area that supports hunting, hiking, and birding, and is home to a significant wildlife population. Of concern are the health risks to nearby residents and a use of the land that taxpayers say they did not agree to. The Ohio Environmental Council says the move conflicts with the area's current use.
ONN's Clay Gordon reporting. A lot of people came out to Finley's Riverside Park for Flag City Night Out. There was a lot of free food and activities and also demonstrations from area safety services. In one of the demonstrations, a Finley firefighter volunteered to be tased by a Finley police officer.
All right. You ready, Clay? Taser, taser, taser. Lay him down, guys. Okay. It's all done, Clay. Give him a round of applause. Yeah. What a boy, Clay.
See video of this demonstration and also K9 Deke showing off his moves and this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, the latest quarterly restaurant report is out from the payment processing platform Square. It looks at the state of the restaurant industry, dining trends, shifts in consumer spending and restaurant wages, and many more metrics here. Joining us this morning is Ming-Tai He, head of restaurants at Square. What are some of the latest trends in the restaurant industry you are seeing from this report?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, so Square released our latest quarterly restaurant report that uses data from across the country, across hundreds of thousands of restaurants on our platform. And there are two big trends that stand out in this report. Labor trends, what we're seeing is some signs of a softening labor market. Wage growth has declined from COVID highs. And unemployment, although it's been low, has recently ticked up. And then we've seen some trends a little bit about restaurants thriving and then struggling. And on the struggling side, what are they doing to offset some of those costs with fees?
You mentioned, kind of alluded to one of the points that I thought was kind of interesting, is that service fees are becoming more common. Exactly how common and what are some of the services that restaurants are most likely to separate out as a separate fee on a customer's bill?
Yeah, absolutely. So service fees, in a little bit of color on that, is a percentage-based or fixed amount added to the transaction total. So you'll see at the bottom of a check. And businesses are using these fees to offset overhead costs, different parts of their business, or if they're associated with maintenance, or simply just to keep afloat. Now, service fees, for a point of clarification, are different from surcharges. Surcharges are used to specifically offset credit card processing fees. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference between service fees and service charges depending on the local laws. Now, yes, you're right. They are still relatively uncommon. You know, Square looked at all the data and found that 3.7% of all restaurant transactions included a service fee. Now, that seems pretty small, but the trend is growing really fast. It's more than doubled since the beginning of 2022.
You mentioned that wages are a big focal point in this particular report. And I know that wage growth among those in the food service industry has for the past couple of years grown at a rate that has largely exceeded the rate of inflation. What did you find when it comes to the earnings of restaurant workers vis-a-vis inflation right now?
Yeah, so as of July this 2024, when you look at the Square Payroll Index, so looking at analyzing restaurant or worker hourly pay, including base wages and tips and overtime, we're seeing that yearly growth continue to be higher than the rate of inflation, so 4.1% versus the inflation rate just shy of 3%. But that overall growth has slowed. So it went up really fast during the COVID times. And also because inflation was rising really fast. So we're seeing a good gap between these two, which is good for the restaurant worker in order to see more dollars in their pocket go further.
I know that this is not necessarily part of the report or the data that you collected and so on, but on the topic of wages, this week, Kamala Harris jumped on the bandwagon of making the idea of making tips and gratuities exempt from income tax. Do you get it? Can you get any sense of how those in the industry feel about that idea?
Yeah, so look, anecdotally, we talk to restaurants. They're running off of slim margins.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that makes the business more sustainable ultimately is good for the restaurant industry. Look, as people are finding ways to pinch pennies and find ways for their dollars to go further, for sure, having your tips on not taxed is good for the restaurant worker.
As you mentioned, finding workers is a growing challenge for many establishments. One of the selling points on the idea of making tips and gratuities exempt from income tax is that it would help alleviate a shortage of workers in this sector. Do you believe that will be the case? I mean, do restaurateurs have a sense that will help them find and hire more people?
Yeah, well, look, I think it makes the restaurant industry more competitive. I mean, essentially, it's a wage increase or sort of a take-home pay increase.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously positive for an industry that's looking for workers, which has struggled in recent past to find those workers. So, there are many choices for people to work in different industries. And so if the restaurant industry can essentially pay more to their employees, then that'll be good for them.
You know, I thought it was interesting that, again, one of the data points in the report is that many cities are seeing nightlife return to pre-pandemic levels. Now, obviously, that is not the be-all and end-all of the restaurant industry. There are restaurants and establishments that don't necessarily rely on nightlife per se, but it is a big chunk of many establishments' base clientele. Talk a little bit about the impact of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you think about nighttime activity, so that's the in-person experience at a restaurant or bar between the hours of 7 p.m. and 4 a.m. And typically you see cities like New York and Miami at the top spot with almost 40% of all transactions going to the nightlife activity. Nationally, it's a little more mute. It's about 20%, so a fifth of all transactions happen in that evening. For the residents around the Toledo area, 30% of all bar and restaurant transactions happen at night. So it's exciting to see that people are getting out about 50% above the national average.
Again, the latest quarterly restaurant report is out from the payment processing platform Square. Ming-Tai He is head of restaurants at Square. Where do we go and get more information? You have all of the data from the report on your website, right?
Yeah, so for more information on Square and to see more detailed results from the report, go to squareup.com.
Interesting stuff there. Ming-Tai He, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So as we've been mentioning, with today being the first day for students in the Findlay City Schools, and the fact that other schools will be starting up here very soon, I think Liberty Benton kids will be back in class next week, and then for the rest of the county schools, it'll be after Labor Day. But still, it's right around the corner, and today is the day for city school students. Thought it would be important to offer up a refresher once again on safety protocols for not only kids and parents, but for the rest of us too, because this impacts really all of us in many ways, even if you don't have kids or your kids are older and no longer in school. In case you missed it earlier this week, we spoke with Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White. So let's talk a little bit about some of the back-to-school safety issues that, again, get a bit of a refresher course because it's been a little while. One of the things that has been popping up on my social media feed from a number of law enforcement agencies are warnings against oversharing on social media, posting all of those back-to-school pictures and so on. Everybody loves those, but, if people know where your kids are going to school and
photos,
all of that.
Even as not innocuous as maybe our favorite Finley Trojans outerwear, right? Maybe it says Glenwood Middle School. Maybe it says Donnell Middle School. Yeah. We've now just given someone a pretty good clue as to where our kids go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Those little pictures that we share about what's our favorite pet, what's our favorite color, what's our, all those are just little details that a potentially nefarious person can maybe clue in on, right?
Yeah.
Hey, do you like cats, little kid? Well, obviously they do because this is what they say in their post.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of little pieces of information like that.
Yeah. So just something, again, not that there's a huge danger of people stalking your kids, but it never hurts to be cautious.
Correct.
Don't want to overstate the risk, but it's not like the risk is zero.
Absolutely. We live in a very safe community, but there is always a potential for something to happen. And that's where we really have to take it upon ourselves to be responsible and protect ourselves.
Yeah. So in terms of the physical back to school time, and we've mentioned this, especially, you know, come Thursday when the buses are rolling, we have to remind ourselves that the buses are out there and making frequent stops and school zones and all of those things that we all have to be mindful of.
Correct. And usually that's what happens. Hey, there's a school bus. Oh, you know what? School is starting.
Yeah.
I should probably pay a little better attention to my driving.
Right.
And that's one that really induces a lot of panic in people. When they see the school bus slowing down, the amber lights coming on. Oh, am I supposed to stop? Am I not? You know what? I'm going to avoid it altogether and go down Side Street.
Yeah. Well, that works too. But again, stopping for the school buses, very important. You can get in a lot of trouble if you don't. So.
Correct. And that's where we talk about lanes, right? If we're talking about three lanes or less, we are required by law to stop for a school bus. If we are talking four lanes or more, you're not required because the kids are getting off on that side of the street.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one that's particularly confusing.
Yeah. Same thing for divided streets, you know, where there's a boulevard down the middle. And not all students are going to be riding the bus. There will be walkers. So what do we tell the kids before we send them out on that first day?
Sure. Hopefully parents are already having that discussion with our kiddos, right? You know, about safety, looking both ways. Don't be darting across the middle of the street between cars, only crossing at intersections, hopefully in marked crosswalks. Mm-hmm. That's where it's safest.
Right.
Also, not running late, right? Have all your stuff packed up, ready to go the night before. Wearing bright clothing. That way we kind of stand out, especially as starts to get darker in the mornings. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to be visible.
Right.
Reflective wear, that's always good as well. And walking in groups. Kids are particularly vulnerable when they're by themselves, so we want to make sure that we're walking in larger groups.
Again, to reference what we were saying earlier, it's a safe community, but you don't want to take any chances.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but if someone needs help, right, there's more people there to get help.
Very good point as well. And as we've mentioned a number of times with respect to that, you know, we can remind our kids about the importance of crossing where they should and being on the lookout for traffic. But especially in those first few days, they're very excited about getting back to school and seeing their friends and meeting their new teacher and getting the new school year started. So they're going to be distracted. We cannot afford to be distracted as we're driving.
Yeah, absolutely.
Expect the unexpected.
Yes, definitely expect the unexpected. Expect a little kiddo to go run out in front of you.
Yeah.
We just have to have our heads on a swivel and paying attention to what's going on. Not playing on our phones, mind you. That's
exactly.
A big one.
And with respect to that, some students, again, not riding the bus, not walking, but once they get a little bit older, going to be driving themselves. So, again, having that conversation with your older kids when they're driving into those school zones themselves.
Hey, absolutely. And one of the things that we find is that younger drivers will imitate older drivers, right? They are going to do what mom and dad do. If they see you playing on your phone, if they see you speeding, if they see you not wearing your seatbelt, that's probably likely they're going to do the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So modeling good behavior.
You know,
key.
One of the other things, and it's not so much an issue with the Findlay City schools, but here in a couple of weeks when all of the county schools get back into class, there are a lot of county schools that have all grade levels in the same location or very nearby locations. So, again, reminding those teen drivers to be on the lookout for the little kids who may be out there going to school.
Absolutely,
as well.
Yes. Always paying attention to what's going on. And speaking of driving, it's also very important to bring up school speed zones because that can be a little bit in of itself. Now, the state law actually says that the speed limits are 20 miles per hour in school zones during school recess and while children are going to or leaving school during opening or closing hours. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people are, well, what is the actual time for school zones? When is this in effect? Mm-hmm. Well, the answer is not so easy because each school has different opening times, closing times.
Right.
This is pretty broad. So this is why a lot of schools have installed flashing signs at the beginning of the school zones just to kind of alert people to what's going on.
Right.
Not that those signs are required because you're still required to follow the law even if those signs are not present, but it does give you an extra heads up. What I tell people is if there's kids present, slow down. Right. Yeah. That's the safest way. Especially if they're walking with obviously backpacks, we can kind of tell, hey, these are school kids.
We need
to slow down.
And, especially not just before and after school, as you mentioned during recess, but, again, referencing Findlay High School, open lunches,
correct,
kids are going to be out in the middle part of the day.
And that's why that school zone is always enforced because we do have kids leaving and coming to school during all hours.
And, as you mentioned, there are in fact school zones, just north of Findlay High School at Heritage Christian. No lights, but it's still a school zone.
Correct.
So
correct.
You know, don't forget about those as well. And if you are dropping off your kids, you got to really be careful.
You really have to pay attention. You really do, especially when you're in a school line with lots of cars, lots of kids, and there's a lot of pressure to get traffic through, right? Because we're backing up traffic.
Right.
Make sure that we are paying very close attention to our kid and other kids around us. And I'm sure teachers, I'm absolutely sure they are doing the exact same thing and they are doing what they can to make sure it's a safe environment.
But not the time. And we've all heard those stories. You get frustrated with the time it takes to drop your kid off and so on. But again, frustration can lead to distraction.
Absolutely. So,
all very important stuff to remember as we send the kids back to school. Again, Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White with us. Brian, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
It's part of our conversation with Brian from a couple of days ago on the program. Bears repeating even from just a couple of days ago as the kids heading back to school today. And the Findlay Police Department has actually been posting a lot of these back to school traffic safety reminders and advisories on their Facebook page. We have that linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. Again, it's been a little while since we've had to worry about this. We get out of the habit of watching for the kids and minding our speed around the school zones and all of that. So now is the time to get ourselves back into that habit because we certainly don't want a tragedy to occur.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
What is going on in Circleville, Ohio? I don't know if you've heard that this is just weird goings on. Something strange is happening in Circleville, which is a small community south of Columbus, I believe Pickaway County, famous for their pumpkin festival every fall. They're about 25 miles south of Columbus. Another member of the town's police department has now been placed on administrative leave. City officials say interim deputy police chief John Farrelly is off the job due to an ongoing investigation. What makes this interesting is that Mr. Farrelly is the fourth Circleville employee to resign, be fired, or be placed on leave since March of this year. So in the past 5 months, there have been four city officials that have resigned, been fired, or been placed on leave. Former police chief Sean Baer and new acting chief Doug Davis were both placed on leave earlier this year and have since resigned. Stephen Wilkinson was hired as the city's public safety director back in March and was fired within the same week. And now the interim deputy police chief is off the job due to an ongoing investigation. Something weird is going on in Circleville. They've got some issues there with respect to public safety, it appears. That's I don't know how safe people feel in Circleville these days. It's just weird. Let's see. Speaking of weird things in various communities, the community of San Antonio, Texas had something very strange happen the other day. Residents couldn't believe their eyes when they saw a man casually walking his dog through the neighborhood, which is not an unusual sight. But in this case, he was naked. Not the dog. The man walking the dog was naked. But naked. Harley Walters said he was seriously fearful of the man, or feared for the man. They thought maybe he was having a mental breakdown or a stroke or something. But when another neighbor asked the man if he realized he wasn't wearing any pants, he simply replied, "Oh yeah," and continued his walk. The emperor has no clothes. Kind of. Do you realize you're not wearing any pants? Yeah, I realize that's... And just went on his way. Police do say that the man appeared to be intoxicated on some sort of illicit substance. Because they were called. I mean, the neighbors called the cops and said, "Hey, there's this naked guy walking his dog here in the neighborhood." They say he was high, and they drove him and his dog back home. He was not charged with a crime, but I would imagine if he does it again, Mr. Walters, the neighbor who spoke to local news reporters, said his first thought was actually, "How dare he walk his dog without a leash?" Really, that was your first thought? "How dare he walk his dog without a leash?" Mm-hmm. Be thinking the naked part is the part you really should be concerned about, I'm thinking. From the international file of the broken news, this is a bit embarrassing. A charity in New Zealand unknowingly gave away candies made of meth to up to 400 people. The candies were donated to the Auckland City Mission, and the folks at the mission... handed them out to the folks who were staying there, and it turned out they were made of methamphetamines. Authorities believe the donor, whoever it was that gave the candies to the charity, were the donor was unaware of the contents. Three people actually got sick, had to be taken to the hospital, but the rest just had, you know, an interesting evening, I guess. The treats, turns out, had a street value of $600 per, and there were like 400 of these, so, yeah. And they were apparently packaged in regular candy wrappers. The company of the candy, or the company president, the candy company president said, "We want to make clear that our company does not condone or use... does not use or condone the use of any illegal drugs in our products. And basically, the mission said the same thing. Authorities suspect the candies were originally disguised as candy in order to be transported, the illicit drugs for kids. But how they ended up in the hands of whoever donated them to the mission is yet to be determined. They don't really know how they came into... the possession of the mission. They know who donated them, but why, how he came to have them, it's a whole mystery. Embarrassing. An unusual theft in Queens, in the New York City borough of Queens, where a bodega owner is asking for help after a thief stole the only thing in the store not for sale, his beloved cat. The 18-year-old feline, Antonio, has been sort of the mascot for this storefront for more than a decade. And the manager and his cat, both on the job earlier this month, when Glenn Alagasi, the store's owner, was inside, Antonio the cat was just napping out on the doorstep. And security video shows someone came up and snatched him and took off. At first, The cat gets away from the catnapper, but then the thief comes back and grabs the cat again, and the cat hasn't been seen since. Mr. Alagasi says Antonio needs his medicine. He's 18 years old, and he insists that he will not press charges. He just wants Antonio home safe. Missing cat posters are up all over Queens, and friends have launched an Instagram page to try and help bring Antonio home. That is terrible. Who'd steal an 18-year-old cat that's been the mascot of this community store for more than a decade? That's terrible. I mean, I know that the store owner says he won't press charges, but I hope somebody does. They find this. It's terrible. And speaking of robberies, how about a robbery gone wrong? This is in Maplewood, Minnesota, where an 8-year-old girl helped thwart a robbery, an armed robbery, no less, at Big Discount Liquors there in Maplewood. So this is the story. The thief, the would-be robber, was attacking this little girl's father, who happened to be the manager of the store. She was there as Conchobar Morell entered the store just as the store was closing. They were closing, so daughter is with the dad. 8-year-old daughter is with dad as he's closing up the store. They're going to go home. And suddenly, Mr. Morell comes in just as they're preparing to close and brandished what turned out to be a BB gun. And he started ransacking the store and attacking the manager of the store. And that's when the 8-year-old grabbed a baseball bat and started whacking the thief. The 8-year-old started whacking the thief and chased him off. The clerk said of his daughter, quote, "I'm so proud of her. She's so strong. I certainly didn't expect that she would do that." That's awesome. Beaten off by an 8-year-old. I love it. Came to her father's rescue. There you go. I'll set aside the idea of an 8-year-old in a liquor store to begin with at closing time. But, you know, story has a happy ending. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
When local news breaks, you can hear about it on social media at lightning speed. And while getting you the information fast is important, WFIN will always present the story only after verifying with actual sourced facts. This is WFIN News Director Matt Demchek. Trust the voice that's been covering the news in Findlay and Hancock County for more than 80 years. You can depend on us to get the story right every time. On social media, 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and at 95.5 FM.
For your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. If you want to be a better parent, work on your sense of humor, it turns out. New published study has found that having a sense of humor can help you build more positive relationships with your kids. 71%, they asked in a study, they surveyed more than 300 individuals who are now adults between the ages of 18 and 45. So from just exiting the, angst-ridden teen years up to middle age. And they asked about how humor was a part of their childhood. And 71.8%, this is a very specific number, 71.8% of those in the study, participants in the study, felt that humor was an effective parenting tool. And the researchers discovered that funny parents could hold the key to promoting creative problem solving and resilience. The author of the study, Lucy Emery, for Plus One, said, "Stressful situations happen a lot when parenting. Humor can help diffuse that tension and hierarchy and help both parties, parents and kids, feel better about a stressful situation." In the study, more than 44% of these now adults, reflecting on their childhood, more than 44% said their funny parents did a good job raising them. And as we mentioned, 71.8% felt that humor was an effective parenting tool. By contrast, just 2.9% of respondents who said their parents didn't use humor around the house when they were growing up, just 2.9% reported having a good relationship with their parents then and now. So, again, if you want to build a good, strong relationship with your kids, bring on the dad jokes. Bring on the dad jokes. Why did the farmer decide to try a career in music? Because he had a ton of sick beats. You know, get it? Beats? Ba-dum-bum! Okay, that one was not so good. Let's see here. No, that one's not good. I'm trying to come up with a good dad joke. What do you call a Frenchman wearing sandals? A Philippe flop. Philippe flop. It's a sense of humor, man. You got to have a sense of humor. Let's see. Why is it so cheap to throw a party at a haunted house? Because the ghosts bring all the booze. All right. I'll stop. But you get the point, right? So now to our Throwback Thursday feature this morning. With the kids heading back to school, the Findlay City Schools today, and other students heading back to class very soon, few issues are as pervasive and serious as bullying and cyberbullying. We hear the stories in the news all the time. Millions of children are victimized on a daily basis, and those stories can be incredibly heartbreaking. Dr. Kate Lund is author of the book Bounce: Help Your Child Build Resilience and Thrive in School, Sports, and Life. And back in October of 2017, we spoke to her about the book and about strategies for helping your kids deal with the inevitable encounters with those bullies. It is today's Throwback Thursday. One of the things that I like about your book, Dr. Lund, is that while we spend a lot of time talking about how to put an end to bullying, you recognize that there always have been bullies, there always will be bullies. This is something that most kids experience at one time or another, so they have to have the tools to rise above it.
Right, absolutely. That's sort of the core of what we're trying to get through with the book. And, you know, I believe that really helping kids to develop a strong social-emotional foundation from the get-go, sort of building the skills inherent in emotional intelligence, which would include things like self-awareness and the ability to accept and understand individual differences, you know, among peers, is really at the core. It's so important. Mm-hmm. And that helps on both sides of the bullying equation.
Yeah, it's not to say that we should accept this as a fact of life. That's not the point. But recognizing the right reality that, you know, this does exist, and helping kids deal with it, I think is a really important part of the equation that I think sometimes goes overlooked. Again, it's right there in the title of the book. Help Your Child Build Resilience. Talk about that word and why that is so important.
Resilience is really, really important because it's the thing that really helps kids to move through and beyond those inevitable challenges and frustrations that they're going to face, you know, in school, sports, and beyond, whether that comes, you know, in the form of bullying or otherwise. There are a million different challenges out there that kids are going to face. And so resilience beyond that, you know, also builds a sense of inner strength, a sense of, huh, that might be hard, but I can do that. You know, even if I don't succeed the first time, mm-hmm, I can try again from another angle.
And similarly, it's about being able to move beyond what a bully or somebody who does not have your best interest at heart, what they may say or think about you.
Exactly. And so that's, you know, as we know, easier said than done.
Sure.
But once a child is really sort of developing that foundation of resilience in their life, they're in touch with their strengths. They know how to use those strengths for their advantage. They're able to answer that question, what's possible for me and what do I have to do to get there? And they're sort of focused on that piece, really helps them to rise above and circumvent the things, the unkind things that a bully might be saying.
So how do we begin to help build that resilience in our kids? Because this is not an inherent thing.
You know, it is true that certain kids are just from the get-go more resilient than others, but, you know, we can really help to foster this sense of resilience in all kids, regardless of where they're starting from. And it's this idea of, you know, first, helping kids to tolerate frustration and manage their emotions. Because if a child is not able to manage their emotions, chances are they're going to shut down and not be able to move forward. So really helping them in that domain is very important. Courage is another big one that's going to help kids to become resilient. You know, that ability to take the first step forward when things are hard, to try again when they don't succeed, you know, to overcome fear, push limits, all within a supportive scaffold from a strong support system, but really, really important as well in building resilience in our kids.
You also talk about the importance of building confidence in our kids. And there, again, are things that we can do to proactively help them build that confidence.
And that's another one of the sort of foundation pillars of resilience. And so to help kids, again, it sort of goes along a lot with courage to take those risks, take those chances, find ways to use their strengths to their advantage such that they do experience small successes along the way. And as they experience those successes, that will build into a more global sense of confidence. And really helping kids to find where their passions are is another important piece of helping them to become confident young people. Because if we're pushing a kid to, you know, become a baseball player, when that's really not where their aptitudes are or their interests lie, we're probably not going to be helping them to become very confident. But really, if they're, you know, into science or robotics, for example, and we encourage exploration in those areas, confidence will evolve in time because that's where aptitude and passion lies.
And it really strikes me that these principles, I mean, we talk about this in the context of bullying and cyberbullying and the mean things that kids are going to more than likely experience at some point during their growth and development. But this really can apply to just about any challenge in life, whether it's mean kids at school or braving that first time up on stage in front of people, speaking in front of a group of people, or first time coming to bat at a baseball game, as you were mentioning. You know, any of those things can all take a great deal of resilience.
Absolutely. All of the principles laid out in the book really do apply across context, sort of across age ranges too. The book is written with the younger child in mind, but these principles really span, you know, across age ranges and challenges, really applying to any challenge a child might face out there. And there's so many.
Yeah.
So many. And it's inevitable that they're going to face them.
Bounce. Help your child build resilience and thrive in school, sports, and life. Dr. Kate Lund is the author. Dr. Lund, thanks very much for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it as well.
From back in October of 2017, it is our Throwback Thursday segment this morning. You can learn more about the book at our webpage, goodmornings.net. And that will wrap up our program for today. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Once again, goodmornings.net. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow to finish up the week.